Hello and welcome to the Idaho Reports podcast. I'm Logan Finney. There's been a lot of legislative action over the past 3 months over the course of the 2024 legislative session. Joining me to discuss many of the issues that have been discussed is Amy Dundon, legislative strategist with the ACLU of Idaho. Thanks for joining us, Amy.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks, Logan.
Just for context for our folks listening at home, your job is legislative strategist. What does that entail?
Right. Let's see. So during legislative session, I do sort of direct lobbying. I work in partnership with community leaders, so sort of grass tops and grassroots lobbying. I work with some really incredible local organizations that are politically aligned with the types of work that we do, right? They're interested in protecting civil rights and civil liberties, just like us. So it's a lot of early mornings and late nights at the Idaho State House, and a lot of meetings. I also read the bulk of the legislation that comes through, anything that we think might affect civil rights or civil liberties, and do some analysis. I draft testimony, I give testimony verbally. So yeah, just everything to do with legislation.
All right. Well, we'll get into a few of those specific pieces of legislation in a moment, but I do want to reference the Paper Hearts campaign or protest that you guys are engaged with. As we're recording this conversation on Tuesday, it's actually happening right now, I believe. Can you tell us about those Paper Hearts and what they're symbolizing at the State House?
Yeah, so this is really a community-led, community-driven direct action that the ACLU of Idaho decided it was appropriate for us to support. What we did was we sent a call out to folks across the state, right? So it's a statewide effort, and we asked, community to send in some hearts. And so our goal was to get 48,000 hearts, which represent the 48,000 LGBTQ folks across the state of Idaho whose lives and rights are threatened by some of the most harmful legislation we've seen in the nation, really, during the 2024 session in Idaho. And so the idea here really is to call attention and tell a story about the ways that trans Idahoans, LGBTQ Idahoans more broadly, are, vibrant, crucial members of our community. And they're, Idahoans at the end of the day, and they have, every right, as everyone else does, to live with dignity and respect.
Let's talk about some of those specific issues that are being debated. And in some cases, legislation has made it to the governor's desk and been signed. Starting with the LGBTQ issues and transgender-related issues, talk to me about the legislation that's made its way through the system there, and what are ACLU's concerns when it comes to civil rights?
Right. So, we've seen stuff that we've seen in the past. We've seen attempts to censor speech, whether that's through libraries or through a flags bill. That type of legislation, on its face has some constitutional issues because it affects the rights of folks to freely access information or speak freely about certain topics. We've also seen bills that have perhaps more of a material impact in people's lives. And so one of the most concerning pieces of legislation we saw this session was House Bill 668. That would repeal it would prohibit any gender-affirming medical care if it's funded with Medicaid, but it goes further than that, right? So it says that no gender-affirming medical care can happen on public grounds and public facilities, and any physician, healthcare provider that works for a public agency also is prohibited from providing this sort of care. That's troubling because
that could be not just things like funding through Medicaid, but also things like county hospitals and
such. That's exactly right. Right. So that it's stylized as a no public funds for gender-affirming medical care ban. Not so dissimilar from the no public funds for abortion care ban that we saw in the 2023 session. Right, and as you said, it is a wide, a very far-reaching bill, right, that could have impacts for people across the state. The reason, it's so concerning is that every major medical association in the United States has found that gender-affirming medical care is necessary. It's life-saving. And that's actually written into the rules of Medicaid. So Idaho, the state legislature is you know, risking having funding for our Medicaid program, period, be withheld, or, you know, in other ways, the state might be punished for violating the rules of Medicaid.
There are similar issues, but different issues of reproductive rights and LGBTQ issues. They get approached the same way at the State House a lot of times, but women as a class are a much larger class, let's say, than trans people specifically, or LGBTQ people. When someone is thinking about this bill or these types of bills, if they don't have a transgender person in their family, why should they be caring about these issues?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think if we think about the Constitution, which is what our deal is as the ACLU, we really think about how the Constitution, its intent, its express intent, and its function is to protect the rights of the minority, right? And so we think about trans Idahoans, transgender people writ large, right? This is a tiny, tiny percentage of people who live in the United States. And I would say because of that, right, it's crucial that they have access, just like everyone else, to you know, the same sorts of equal protections, the same sorts of safety for kids, the same kinds of, you know, access to the restroom, right? Like, all of these things are just sort of basic, you know, rights. And I guess at the end of the day, you're right, trans folks are a much smaller population. But they have every right to have full bodily autonomy and to live with dignity and safety.
When you guys at the ACLU are approaching a legislative session, how do you weigh where to spend your time and energy? Because, like we've referenced, there's a lot going on. If there's a bill about, for example, House Bill 421 on the definitions of sex and gender, that's kind of a more conceptual thing that could have effects in the legal system, versus something like transgender policies for school bathrooms. That has an immediate impact on people's lives. How do you make the determinations of what's worth your time and effort as an organization with limited resources?
Yeah, I mean, we are so incredibly thorough and careful about where to engage. You know, Idaho has really, in the past several years, ramped up its attacks on LGBTQ folks, but also, like, the immigrant community. Like, we're seeing a wide variety of attacks, and it's important that, I mean, on the one hand, right, that we mitigate harm. And so if we're thinking about, yeah, last year's restroom bill, last year's ban on gender-affirming medical care for minors, it's so clear that there is, again, a material harm that would be immediate and devastating to a small group of people. But it's also really important, at least, you know, when we're thinking about whether or not to go and testify on something like a pronouns bill, or right, as you said, the definition of sex and gender. It's really important that community knows that there are smart people in the room who are interested and aware of the fact that everyone has and ought to have the same access to, again, living a life that is, you know, dignified and is safe. And so, you know, we want to make sure that we're there in the room and we're testifying, because it is so important that that 12-year-old queer kid hears us say, you have every right to live how you need to live.
I want to talk about a pair of bills that are not quite covering the same thing, but are closely related. There was Senate Bill 1329, which relates to parental rights in making medical decisions for their children. And then there's also Senate Bill 1352, which has to do with strongly held beliefs and principles of counselors and therapists and what sort of care they have to provide to their patients. Can you talk to me about those bills and what your organization perceives them as trying to get at?
Absolutely, and you're right to pair them, right? These are sort of cousin bills, for sure, sibling bills maybe even. I think what we've seen in the past several years, and maybe particularly in the 2024 legislative session, is that there appear to be attempts to find new avenues to strip away the civil rights and civil liberties of transgender folks, of pregnant people, right? And so what we're seeing here is really a claim that's being made in those pieces of legislation that say that religious rights and free speech have precedent over the rights of everyone else to live you know, a life free of discrimination. So when we have physicians who, you know, really have to make a choice about whether or not, you know, to see a particular patient or to give some kind of medical advice, especially with 1329, right? This is a bill where if a kid needs to get, you know, any kind of screening done or any kind of, you know, testing done that they maybe don't want their parents to know about, it's so crucial that that kid has access to a trusted adult. So, you know, we're deeply troubled by, you know, the weaponizing of some rights against other rights, and in particular seeing, you know, religious and moral freedoms and deeply held beliefs pitted against the rights of, you know, everyone else to have equal access to, you know, just basic health care, things that are sort of like socially standard.
How would you respond to a lawmaker who is supportive of these type of bills and says, well, these are just strengthening things that are already in our Constitution and already a bedrock of our society?
I'm not sure that that is the proper framework, right? I would maybe push back a little and say, you know, in Idaho, of all places, where time and time again in our state constitution, it makes so clear that the government ought not to infringe on religious liberties, right? What that means is that everyone has the right to practice or not practice a religion. So when we begin to legislate religiosity and specifically Christianity into our rules and our laws, that's a clear indicator that we've departed from the idea that you know, the government has no business in telling people what to believe.
What does the 2024 lawmaking session reveal to you about the broader political environment that we're living in right now?
You know, it's tense. I think we're seeing, and we have seen for the past four decades, an increased polarization with folks on different sides of the political aisle. But we're also seeing some performative legislation, as you've said, right? Like we've seen bills that maybe don't won't really have an impact necessarily. They might be a conceptual shift or, you know, the family values, traditional family values month piece of legislation, right? That's really proclaiming something. But what we're troubled by is that because the state legislature has spent, you know, the bulk of its time and energy on those sorts of bills, that, you know, basic things like, you know, education, healthcare, infrastructure, these things go ignored. And we know that legislation that forces people to think a certain way or discriminates against people for believing something or for being something really doesn't benefit anyone's life, right? The government ought to be in the business of making things better for Idahoans.
And what about the legal environment that we're in? Because I think we've seen a little bit of a shift in the legislature over the last couple of years where they are more willing to run pieces of legislation with the idea in mind that it's going to end up in the courts and the state is going to be advocating for a position, not just legislating.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to speak to legislative intent, right? But we do know that the legal environment is different across the United States, partly because there has been such a huge increase in anti-LGBTQ and specifically anti-trans legislation. And so what that means is that for organizations like the ACLU of Idaho, the broader ACLU, and other organizations that fight every day for the civil rights and civil liberties of people, I'm thinking of Lambda Legal, right, Legal Voice, these groups that really advocate for equal protections, essentially, we are all quite taxed because of this incessant legislative work that may be and appears to be sort of aimed at ensuring that these sorts of issues make their way through the courts.
When I put that proposition forward, I'm specifically thinking about a bill that would have tried to impose the death penalty on people who are convicted of lewd and with lewd conduct of a minor under 12, and that's an instance where the Supreme Court has already ruled states are not allowed to do that.
That's exactly right. And so, you know, I think it's very disappointing to see lawmakers blatantly disregard legal precedent. You know, we can think about just the basic diplomacy that's required of governance and how it is so crucial that we maintain healthy boundaries between different branches of government, and also that there is a mutual respect, for instance, between the judicial and legislative branch, right? So when we hear bills being introduced, the lewd conduct bill that would impose the death penalty, that's clearly unconstitutional. I know the bill sponsor was pressed on this and, you know, stated plainly that he believed that the United States Supreme Court got it wrong. And so when we're seeing that kind of departure from, you know, sort of basic democratic norms, it's very concerning.
A lot of pieces of legislation make it into law despite opposition from the ACLU and your compatriots at the legislature testifying and sharing stories from constituents and trying to change hearts and minds. How does that feel in a legislature that sometimes is openly critical of the ACLU, or sometimes will paint your organization as a poster child as one of those far left radical organizations?
Yeah, to me it's been quite surprising, right? We are an organization that is nonpartisan. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. I always say, like, our whole deal is the Constitution, right? And so it would seem to me that a lawmaker might be interested also in upholding and ensuring that laws that they're writing or passing are constitutional. And so when we see a disregard not only for the stories of community, right, if folks get up and testify, or if we tell the story of a particular Idahoan that we think matters for that bill, we're also deeply concerned that there appears to be no receptivity, right? Like, there's maybe an inability to really hear our concerns about the constitutionality of certain bills. So that is concerning. It's also frustrating on a personal level. But again, I mean, I think it's one of the things that leads us to something like the 48K heart, right? Like, so we're hearing community members feel the same way, that these bills will change their lives in ways that will make their lives much worse. And so how do we get that point across to lawmakers? And in some cases, that really is just, you know, having conversations with these folks. But sometimes it's also being a little more strategic in how we send that message.
I want to be clear, you're a legislative strategist, not a legal strategist for the ACLU. But I do want to ask you, once things have made it out of the legislative sphere and been signed into law and are outside of kind of your wheelhouse, how does your organization, the ACLU, approach, again, using those limited resources to make change?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough work to figure out, you know, when to file a legal challenge. I'm not involved in those conversations. I'm not an attorney. I do a lot of work, both sort of in community, so different organizations, local organizations who are built of directly impacted folks, right? So folks who would be harmed if a particular bill passes. We're in constant conversation with all of these people throughout the legislative session. And we bring, you know, the thoughts and concerns and fears of those people to our legal team. And we think about, you know, the level of harm that a particular bill would do, and we think about to whom, and we sort of begin to, you know, discern type of urgency in particular pieces of legislation that might warrant a legal challenge.
Can you remind me what cases your organization is involved with right now? Let's limit it to just from the last couple legislative sessions. What sort of issues are in the courts right now?
Yeah, we do have a lot of cases, and they stretch back many years. And I think that's important to note because those cases are expensive for Idaho taxpayers. Those cases cost a lot of money for the state. And these are not easy issues, and they tend to be lengthy, lawsuits that move quite slowly as they make their way through the courts. Last year, we filed a lawsuit against the state of Idaho, against the Attorney General, for the ban on gender-affirming medical care for minors. You know, our argument has been upheld by the court twice so far as it's sort of moving its way through the appeals process. What we're seeing is that, you know, basically, I guess the grounds of our legal challenges nearly always have something to do with equal protections, the 14th Amendment. We want to make sure that everybody has, again, that, you know, that they can enjoy the same rights and freedoms that everybody else does.
Amy Dundon, legislative strategist with the ACLU of Idaho, thanks so much for your time this week.
Thank you, Logan.
Presentation of Idaho Reports on Idaho Public Television is made possible through the generous support of the Laura Moore Cunningham Foundation, committed to fulfilling the Moore and Bettis family legacy of building the great state of Idaho, by the Friends of Idaho Public Television, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support for Idaho Public Television comes from the School of Public Service at Boise State University, providing objective and impactful research for Idaho and beyond, and academic programs with hands-on learning that equip students to be effective public service leaders.